Is there a desire in you to not just attend revival, but live in revival? Welcome to the Revival Lifestyle Podcast. I'm your host, Isaiah Saldivar. I've been in revival for the last 10 years, as well as traveling and being a part of many revivals throughout the United States. I'm going to be sharing with you how to live a radical lifestyle of revival on a daily basis. We are on day number six, day number seven. Let me check. I don't even know now. It's been so long. 6 days. Day number six of the Bible in 90 days. So glad you're here. Load up in the chat. Let me make sure all my stuff is loaded on my end. I forgot to load my audio interface, so that's good. It would be nice if you guys can hear me clearly. Okay, that is uploaded audio. We're on Exodus 16. Shout out to Alyssa and Candace who did the Bible reading yesterday. As I've said before, guys, I'll have different days. I'll be reading obviously most of them, but different people will be subbing in here and there, family members, friends, to join the reading. So you'll get different special guests as we go. Alyssa will be doing more as well. And I just told her any day she wants to do it, she can do it. So we'll have that mixed in. But we appreciate you guys being here. We've been averaging like 1,000, 1,200, 1,300 people live a day. And then the videos are getting really great views. And so I'm excited. People are getting in the Word. That's the bottom line, is I want people excited about the Word of God. I want them excited about reading for long periods of time. If we could watch movies for hours, if we could play games for hours, if we could hang out with friends for hours, why could we not read the Bible for an hour? And that's something I felt convicted about. I'm like, man, this is such a big challenge. And then I thought about, there's a lot of things that I'm willing to do for hours. So why not get into the Bible and just devour the Word? It's great for you. So this is the NLT using the Bible, Life Church Bible app, YouVersion Bible app, and then Bible in 90 days. Let's get started. We are on Exodus chapter 16. Exodus 16, here we go. Then the whole community of Israel set out from Elim and journeyed into the wilderness of Sin. Between Elim and Mount Sinai, they arrived there on the 15th day of the second month, 1 month after leaving the land of Egypt. There, too, the whole community of Israel complained about Moses and Aaron. If only God had killed us back in Egypt, they moaned. There we sat around pots filled with meat and all ate bread that we wanted, but now you've brought us into the wilderness just to starve us to death. And how quickly we want to go back to our old life. Then the Lord said to Moses, look, I'm going to bring food, rain food down from heaven for you. Each day the people can go out and pick as much food as they want, as they need for that day. I will test them in this to see whether or not they will follow my instructions. On the sixth day, they will gather food, and when they prepare it, there will be twice as much as usual. So Moses and Aaron said to all the people of Israel, by evening, you'll realize it was the Lord that brought you out of the land of Egypt. In the morning, you'll see the glory of the Lord because he's heard your complaints, which are against him, not against us. What have we done that you should complain about us? Then Moses added, the Lord will give you meat to eat in the evening and bread to satisfy you in the morning, for he's heard your complaints. Your complaints are against the Lord, not us. Then Moses said, announce this to the entire community of Israel. Present yourselves before the Lord, for he has heard your complaining. And as Aaron spoke, to the whole community of Israel, they looked out towards the wilderness. There they could see the awesome glory of the Lord in the cloud. Then the Lord said to Moses, I've heard the Israelites' complaints. Now tell them, in the evening you'll have meat to eat, and in the morning you'll have all the bread you want. Then you'll know that I am the Lord your God. That evening, vast numbers of quail flew in and covered the camp. And the next morning, the whole area around the camp was wet with dew. When the dew evaporated, a flaky substance as fine as frost blanketed the ground. The Israelites were puzzled when they saw it. What is this? They asked each other. They had no idea what it was. And Moses told them, it is the food the Lord has given you to eat. These are the Lord's instructions. Each household should gather as much as it needs. Pick up 2 quarts for each person in your tent. So the people of Israel did as they were told, and some gathered a lot and some only little. But when they measured it out, everyone had just enough. Those who had gathered a lot, nothing left over, and those who gathered a little, enough. Each family had just what they needed. Then Moses told them, do not keep any of it until the morning. But some of you didn't listen and kept it until the morning, but by then it was full of maggots and had terrible smell, and Moses was very angry with them. Now this is also a picture of, we should be getting fresh manna from the Lord every day, fresh revelation every day, and if you're trying to eat yesterday's manna, yesterday's revelation, it becomes rotten. So every day, Lord, speak to me, daily bread. After this, the people gathered the food morning by morning, each family according to its needs. And as the sun became hot, the flakes they had not picked up melted and disappeared. On the sixth day, they gathered twice as much as usual, 4 quarts for each person instead of 2. Then all the leaders of the community came and asked Moses for an explanation. He told them, this is what the Lord commanded. Tomorrow will be a day of complete rest, a holy Sabbath set apart for the Lord. So bake or boil as much food as you want today, and set aside what is left for tomorrow. Verse 24. So they put some aside until the morning, just as Moses had commanded. And in the morning, the leftover food was wholesome and good, without maggots or odor. Moses said, "Eat this food today, for today is a Sabbath day dedicated to the Lord. There will be no food on the ground today. You may gather the food for 6 days, but on the seventh day on the Sabbath, there will be no food on the ground that day." Some of the people went out anyway on the seventh day, but they found no food. The Lord asked Moses, "How long will these people refuse to obey my commands and instructions? They must realize that the Sabbath is the Lord's gift to you. That is why he gives you a 2-day supply on the sixth day. It'll be enough for 2 days. On the Sabbath day, you must each stay in your place. Do not go out and pick up food on the seventh day." Verse 30. So the people did not gather any food on the seventh day. The Israelites called the food manna. It was like white coriander seed, and it tasted like honey wafers. Then Moses said, "This is what the Lord has commanded. Fill a 2-quart container with manna to preserve it for your descendants. Then later generations will be able to see the food I gave in the wilderness when I set you free from Egypt." Moses said to Aaron, "Get a jar and fill it with 2 quarts of manna, then put it in a sacred place before the Lord to preserve it for all future generations." Aaron did just as the Lord commanded Moses. He eventually placed it on the Ark of the Covenant in front of the stone tablets inscribed with the terms of the covenant. So the people of Israel ate manna for 40 years until they arrived at the land where they would settle. They ate manna until they came to the borderland of Canaan. The container used to measure the manna was an omer, which was 1/10 of an ephah. It held about 2 quarts. Chapter 17. At the Lord's command, the whole community of Israel left the wilderness of Sin and moved from place to place. Eventually, they camped at Rephidim, but there was no water there for the people to drink. So once more, the people complained against Moses. "Give us water to drink," they demanded. "Quiet," Moses replied. "Why are you complaining against me, and why are you testing the Lord?" But tormented by thirst, they continued to argue with Moses. "Why did you bring us out of Egypt? Are you trying to kill us, our children, and our livestock with thirst?" Then Moses cried out to the Lord, "What should I do with these people? They're ready to stone me." And the Lord said to Moses, "Walk out in front of the people. Take your staff, the one you use when you struck the water of the Nile, and call some of the elders of Israel to join you. I will stand before you on the rock of Mount Sinai and strike the rock, and water will come gushing out. Then the people will be able to drink." So Moses struck the rock as he was told, and water gushed out as the elders looked on. Moses named the place Massah, which means test. Massah. And Meribah, which means arguing, because the people of Israel argued with Moses and tested the Lord by saying, "Is the Lord here with us or not?" Verse 8. While the people of Israel were at Rephidim, the warriors of Amalek attacked them. Moses commanded Joshua, Choose some men to go out and fight the army of Amalek for us. Tomorrow, I will stand at the top of the hill, holding the staff of God in my hand." So Joshua did what Moses had commanded and fought the army of Amalek. Meanwhile, Moses, Aaron, and Hur climbed to the top of the nearby hill. As long as Moses held up the staff in his hand, the Israelites had an advantage. But whenever he dropped his hand, the Amalekites gained the advantage. Moses' arm soon became so tired he could no longer hold them up. So Aaron and Hur found a stone for him to sit on. They stood on each side of Moses, holding up his hands, so his hands stayed steady until the sunset. I want to preach these guys. There's so many of these stories. I was like, oh, I could preach this. As a result, Joshua overwhelmed the army of Amalek in battle. After the victory, the Lord instructed Moses, "Write this down on a scroll as a permanent reminder and read it aloud to Joshua. I will erase the memory of Amalek from under heaven." Moses built an altar there and named it Yahweh Nisi, which means "The Lord is my banner." He said, "They raised their fist against the Lord's throne, so now the Lord will be at war with Amalek generation after generation." Chapter 18. Moses' father-in-law Jethro, the priest of Midian, heard about everything God had done for Moses and his people, the Israelites. He heard especially how the Lord had rescued them from Egypt. Earlier, Moses had sent his wife, Zipporah, and his 2 sons back to Jethro, who had taken them in. Moses' first son was named Gershom, for Moses had said, "When the boy was born, I've been a foreigner in a foreign land." His second son was named Eleazar, for Moses said, "The God of my ancestors was my helper. He rescued me from the sword of Pharaoh." Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, now came to visit Moses in the wilderness. He brought Moses' wife and 2 sons with him, and they arrived while Moses and the people were camped near the mountain of God. Jethro had sent a message to Moses saying, "I, Jethro, your father-in-law, am coming to see you with your wife and your 2 sons." So Moses went out to meet his father-in-law. He bowed low and kissed him. They asked each other about their welfare and then went into Moses' tent. Moses told his father-in-law everything the Lord had done to Pharaoh in Egypt on behalf of Israel. He also told about all the hardships they experienced along the way and how the Lord had rescued his people from their troubles. Jethro was delighted when he heard about all the good things the Lord had done for Israel as he rescued them from the hand of the Egyptians. "Praise the Lord," Jethro said, "for he's rescued you from the Egyptians and from Pharaoh. Yes, he has rescued Israel from the powerful hand of Egypt. I now know that the Lord is greater than all the other gods because he rescued his people from the oppression of the proud Egyptians." Then Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, brought a burnt offering and sacrifice to God. And Aaron and all the elders of Israel came out to join him in a sacrificial meal in God's presence. The next day, Moses took his seat to hear the people's disputes against each other. They waited before him from morning till evening. When Moses' father-in-law saw all that Moses was doing for the people, he said, "What are you really accomplishing here? Why are you trying to do all this alone while everyone stands around from morning until evening?"
"Preach,"
Moses replied, "because the people come to get me. People come to me to get a ruling from God. When a dispute arises, they come to me, and I'm the one who settles the case between the quarreling parties. I inform the people of God's decrees, and I give them instructions." "This is not good," Moses' father-in-law said. "You're going to wear yourself out, and the people too. This job is too heavy of a burden for you to handle all by yourself. Now listen to me, and let me give you a word of advice, and may God be with you. You should continue to be the people's representative before God, bringing their dispute to him. Verse 20, "but teach them God's decrees and give them this instruction. Show them how to conduct their lives." Oh, give them his instructions. "But select from people some who are capable, honest men who fear God and hate bribes. Appoint them as leaders over groups of 1,000, 100, 50, and 10. They should always be available to solve the people's problems and common disputes, but have them bring the major cases to you. Let the leaders decide the smaller matters among themselves. They will help you carry the load, making the task easier for you. If you follow this advice, and if God commands you to do so, then you'll be able to endure the pressures, and all these people will go home in peace." Moses listened to his father-in-law's advice and followed his suggestions. He chose capable men from all over Israel and appointed them as leaders over the people. He put them in charge of groups of 1,000, 100, 50, and 10. These men were always available to solve the problems of common disputes, and they brought the major cases to Moses, but they took care of the smaller matters themselves. Soon after this, Moses said goodbye to his father-in-law, who returned to his own land. Oh, a glitch. Hold on, guys. Trying to take us backwards here into Egypt. All right, chapter 20. Exactly 2 months after the Israelites left Egypt, they arrived in the wilderness of Sinai. After breaking camp at Rephidim, they came to the wilderness of Sinai and set up camp there at the base of Mount Sinai. Then Moses climbed the mountain to appear before God. The Lord called him from the mountain and said, "Give these instructions to the family of Jacob. Announce it to the descendants of Israel. You've seen what I did to the Egyptians. You know how I carried you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now, if you obey me and my covenant, you'll be my own special treasure from among all the people on the earth, for all the earth belongs to me. And you'll be my kingdom of priests, my holy nation. This is the message you must give to the people of Israel." So Moses returned from the mountain and called together the elders and told them everything the Lord had commanded. And all the people responded together, "We will do everything the Lord has commanded." So Moses brought the people's answer back to the Lord. Then the Lord said to Moses, "I will come to you in a thick cloud, Moses, so the people themselves can hear me. And when I speak with you, then they will always trust you." Moses told the Lord what the people had said. Then the Lord told Moses, "Go down and prepare the people for my arrival. Consecrate them today and tomorrow and have them wash their clothing. Be sure they're ready on the third day, for on that day, the Lord will come down on Mount Sinai and all the people will watch. Mark off a boundary all around the mountain. Watch the people, be careful. Do not go up on the mountain or even touch its boundaries. Anyone who touches the mountain will certainly be put to death." Verse 13. "No hand may touch the person or animal that crosses the boundary. Instead, stone them or shoot them with arrows. They must be put to death. However, when the ram's horn sounds a long blast, then the people may go up on the mountain." So Moses went down to the people. He consecrated them for worship, and they washed their clothes. He told them, "Get ready for the third day, and until then, abstain from sexual intercourse." On the morning of the third day, thunder roared and lightning flashed, and a dense cloud came down on the mountain. There was a long, loud blast from a ram's horn, and all the people trembled. Moses led them out from the camp to meet with God, and they stood at the foot of the mountain. All of Mount Sinai was covered with smoke because the Lord descended on it in a form of fire. The smoke billowed into the sky like smoke from a brick kiln, and the whole mountain shook violently. As the blast of the ram's horn grew louder and louder, Moses spoke, and God thundered his reply. The Lord came down on Mount Sinai and called Moses to the top of the mountain, so Moses climbed the mountain. Then the Lord said to Moses, or told Moses, "Go back down and warn the people not to break the boundaries to see the Lord, or they will die. Even the priests who regularly come near to the Lord must purify themselves so the Lord does not break out and destroy them." But the Lord, Moses protested, "The people cannot come up to Mount Sinai. You already warned us. You told me, mark off a boundary all around the mountain and set it apart as holy." But the Lord said, "Go down and bring Aaron back up. In the meantime, do not let the priest or the people break through to approach the Lord, or he will break out and destroy them." So Moses went down to the people and told them what the Lord had said. Chapter 20. Then God gave the people all these instructions. That's what I was going to say. Verse 2. "I am the Lord your God who rescued you from the hand of Egypt, the place of your slavery. You must not have any other God but me. You must not make yourselves an idol of any kind or an image of anything in heavens or on earth or in the sea. You must not bow down to them or worship them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God who will not tolerate your affection for any other gods." Still applies today. Amen. "I lay the sins of the parents upon the children. The entire family is affected, even children in the third and fourth generation of those who reject me. But I lavish unfailing love for 1,000 generations on those who love me and obey my command. You must not misuse the name of the Lord your God. The Lord will not let you go unpunished if you misuse his name. Remember to observe the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. You have 6 days each week for your normal work, but on the seventh day is a Sabbath day of rest dedicated to honor the Lord your God. On that day, no one in your household may do any work. This includes you, your sons and daughters, your male and female servants, your livestock, and any foreigners living among you. For in 6 days, the Lord made the heavens, the earth, and the sea, and everything in them. But on the seventh day, he rested. That is why the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and set it apart as holy. Honor your father and mother. Then you'll live a long life, full life in the land of the Lord your God is giving you. You must not murder. You must not commit adultery. You must not steal. You must not testify falsely against your neighbor. You must not covet your neighbor's house. You must not covet your neighbor's wife, male or female servant, ox or donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbor." When the people heard the thunder and the loud blast of the ram's horn, and they saw the flashes of lightning and the smoke billowing from the mountain, they stood at a distance, trembling in fear. And they said to Moses, "You speak to us, and we will listen. But don't let God directly speak to us, or we will die." "Don't be afraid," Moses answered them, "for God has come in this way to test you, and so that your fear in him will keep you from sinning." As the people stood in the distance, Moses approached the dark cloud where God was. Verse 22. And the Lord said to Moses, "Say this to the people of Israel. You saw for yourselves that I spoke to you from heaven. Remember, you must not make any idols of silver or gold to rival me. Build for me an altar made of earth and offer your sacrifices to me, your burnt offering and your peace offerings, your sheep and goats and your cattle. Build my altar wherever I go, wherever I cause my name to be remembered, and I'll come to you and bless you. If you use stones to build my altar, use only natural uncut stones. Do not shape stones with a tool, for that would make the altar unfit for holy use. And do not approach my altar by going up steps. If you do, someone might look under your clothing and see your nakedness." Chapter 21. These are the regulations you must present to Israel. If you buy a Hebrew slave, he may serve no more than 6 years. Set him free on the seventh year, and he'll owe you nothing for his freedom. If he was single when he became your slave, he shall leave single. But if he was married before he became a slave, then his wife must be freed with him. If his master gave him a wife while he was a slave and they had sons and daughters, then only the man will be free in the seventh year, and his wife and children will still belong to the master. But the slave may declare, "I love my master, my wife, and my children. I don't want to be free." If he does this, his master must present him therefore before God. Then his master must take him to the door or doorpost and publicly pierce his ear with an awl. After that, the slave will serve his master for life. When a man sells his daughter as a slave, she will not be freed at the end of 6 years as the men are. If she does not satisfy her owner, he must allow her to be brought back again. but he is not allowed a salary to foreigners since he is the one who broke the contract. But if the slave's owner arranges for her to marry his son, he must no longer treat her as a slave, but as a daughter. If a man who has married a slave wife takes another wife for himself, he must not neglect the rights of the first wife to food, clothing, and sexual intimacy. If he fails in any of these obligations, she may leave as a free woman without making any payment. This is a taste into the book of Leviticus, which, by the way, Jared's going to be reading Mondays, and he starts in Leviticus. So shout out to you, Jared. Thank you, bro, for starting off in Leviticus for us. Not that you chose that, but praise the Lord, it worked out that way. Verse 12, anyone who assaults and kills another person must be put to death. If it was simply an accident permitted by God, I will appoint a place of refuge where the slave can run for safety. However, if someone deliberately kills another person, then the slaver must be dragged even from the altar and put to death. Anyone who strikes a father or mother must be put to death. Don't hit your parents, kids. Telling you. Kidnappers must be put to death, whether they're caught in possession of their victims or already sold as slaves. Anyone who dishonors his mother or father must be put to death. Oh, man. Some of you kids would be dead right now. Now, suppose two men quarrel and one hits the other with a stone or fist, and the injured person does not die but is confined to bed. If he's later able to walk outside again, even with a crutch, the assailant will not be punished but must compensate his victim for lost wages and provide for his full recovery. If a man beats his male or female slave with a club and the slave dies as a result, the owner must be punished. But if the slave recovers within a day or two, then the owner shall not be punished, since the slave is his property. Thankfully, the old covenant this is passed away with. Now, suppose two men are fighting, and in the process, they accidentally strike a pregnant woman, so she gives birth prematurely. If no further injuries result, the man who struck the woman must pay the amount of compensation the woman's husband demands and the judge approves. This is hard to read, guys. It's like a lot of this and that and this and that. But if there's further injury, the punishment must match the injury, a life for a life. An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, a hand for a hand, and a foot for a foot. A burn for a burn, a wound for a wound, a bruise for a bruise. If a man hits his male or female slave in the eye and the eye is blinded, he must let the slave go for free to compensate for the eye. And if a man knocks out the tooth of his male or female slave, he must let the slave go free to compensate from the tooth. If an ox gores a man or woman to death, the ox must be stoned and its flesh not eaten. In such case, however, the owner will not be held liable. But suppose the ox had a reputation for goring, and the owner had been informed but failed to keep it under control. Sorry, I hear my kids screaming. I don't know what they're screaming about. If the ox then kills someone, it must be stoned, and the owner must be put to death. However, the dead person's relatives may accept payment to compensate for the loss of life. The owner of the ox may be redeemed by his life by paying whatever is demanded. The same regulation applies if the ox gores a boy or girl. But if the ox gores a slave, male or female, the animal's owner must pay the slave owners 30 silver coins, and the ox must be stoned. All right, here we go. Suppose someone digs or uncovers a pit and fails to cover it, and then an ox or donkey falls in it. The owner of the pit must pay full compensation to the owner of the animal, and then he gets to keep the dead animal. If someone's ox injures a neighbor's ox and injured ox dies, then the other two owners must sell the live ox and divide the price equally between them. They must also divide the dead animal. But if the ox had a reputation for goring, some of you oxes out here are wild. You just have that reputation. Yet its owner failed to keep it under control, he must pay full compensation, a live ox, for the dead one, but he may keep the dead ox. Wow. Chapter 22. If someone steals an ox or sheep and then kills or sells it, the thief must pay back 5 ox for each ox that was stolen, and 4 sheep for each sheep stolen. If a thief is caught in the act of breaking into a house and is struck and killed in the process, the person who killed the thief is not guilty of murder. Amen. But if it happens in daylight, the one who killed the thief is guilty of murder. A thief who is caught must pay in full for everything he stole, and if he can't pay, he must be sold as a slave to pay for his theft. If someone steals an ox or donkey or a sheep and it's found in the thief's possession, then the thief must pay double the value of the stolen animal. If an animal is grazing in a field or vineyard and the owner lets it stray into someone else's field to graze, then the animal's owner must pay compensation from the best of his grain or grapes. If you're burning thorn bushes and the fire gets out of control and spreads into another person's field, destroying the sheaves or uncut grain of the whole crop, the one who started the fire must pay for the lost crop. Suppose someone leaves money or goods with a neighbor for safekeeping, and they're stolen from the neighbor's house. If the thief is caught, compensation is double the value of what was stolen. But if the thief is not caught, the neighbor must appear before God, who will determine if he stole the property. All right, so don't be watching your neighbor's stuff if they ask you. Suppose there's a dispute between two people who both claim to own a specific ox, particular donkey, sheep, or article of clothing, or any lost property. Both parties must come before God, and the person who God declares guilty must pay double compensation to the other. Now suppose someone leaves a donkey, ox, sheep, or any other animal with a neighbor for safekeeping, but it does not die or is injured or is taken away, and no one sees what happened. The neighbor must take an oath in the presence of the Lord. If the Lord confirms that the neighbor did not steal the property, the owner must accept the verdict and no payment will be required. But if the animal was indeed stolen, the guilty person must pay compensation to the owner. If it was torn to pieces by a wild animal, the remains of the carcass must be shown as evidence and no compensation will be required. If someone borrows an animal from a neighbor and it's injured or dies when the owner is absent, the person who borrowed it must pay full compensation. Just stay with us, chat. All right, just stay with us. This is the Bible. We're getting through it. This is all part of the challenge, is going through stuff like this. But if the owner was present, no compensation is required. And no compensation is required if the animal was rented or for the loss is covered by the rental fee. They had rental fees back then. What? That's crazy. Chapter 16. All right, here we go. Viewer discretion is advised. If a man seduces a virgin who is not engaged to anyone and has sex with her, he must pay the customary bride price and marry her. But if her father refuses to let him marry her, the man must still pay an amount equal to the bride price of the virgin. You must not allow a sorceress to live. That's just thrown right in there. Just, hey, don't let him live. Anyone who has sexual relations with an animal must certainly be put to death. Anyone who sacrifices to any other god than the Lord must be destroyed. You must not mistreat or oppress foreigners in any way. Remember, you yourselves were once foreigners in the land of Egypt. You must not exploit a widow or an orphan. If you exploit them in any way and they cry out to me, then I'll certainly hear their cry. My anger will blaze against them and I'll kill you with the sword. Then your wives will be widows and your children will be fatherless. If you lend money to any of the people who are in need, do not charge interest as a moneylender would. If you take your neighbor's cloak and as security for a loan, you must return it before sunset. This coat may be the only blanket your neighbor has. How can a person sleep without it? If you do not return it and your neighbor cries out for help, then I'll hear them, for I am merciful. You must not dishonor God or curse any of your rulers. You must not hold anything back when you give me offerings from your crops and your wine. You must give me your firstborn sons. You must also give me the firstborn of your cattle, sheep, and goats, but leave the newborn animal with its mother for 7 days. Then give it to me on the eighth day. You must be my holy people. Therefore, do not eat any animal that has been torn up and killed by wild animals. Throw it to the dogs. Chapter 23. You must not pass along false rumors. You must not cooperate with evil people by lying on the witness stand. You must not follow the crowd in doing wrong. When you're called to testify, do not be swayed by the crowd to twist justice. And do not slant your testimony in favor of a person just because the person's poor. If you come up upon your enemy's ox or donkey that has strayed away, take it back to its owner. If you see that the donkey of someone who hates you has collapsed under its load, do not walk by. Instead, stop and help. In a lawsuit, you must not deny justice to the poor. Be sure to never charge anyone falsely with evil. Never sentence an innocent or blameless person to death, for I never declare a guilty person to be innocent. Take no bribes. For a bribe makes you ignore something that you clearly see. A bribe even makes a righteous person twist the truth. You must not oppress foreigners. You know what it's like to be a foreigner, for you yourselves were once foreigners in the land of Egypt. Plant and harvest your crops for 6 years, but let the land be renewed and lie uncultivated during the seventh year. Then let the poor among you harvest whatever grows on its own. Leave the rest of the wild animals to eat. The same applies to your vineyards and olive groves. You have 6 days each week for your ordinary work, but on the seventh day, you must stop working. This gives your ox and your donkey a chance to rest, and it also allows your slaves and foreigners living among you to be refreshed. Pay close attention to all my instructions. You must not call on the name of any other god. Do not even speak their names. Verse 14. Each year, you must honor or celebrate three festivals in my honor. First, celebrate the festival of the unleavened bread. For 7 days, the bread you must eat must be made without yeast, just as I commanded. Celebrate this festival annually at the appointed time in early spring in the month of Abib. For that is the anniversary of your departure from Egypt. No one may appear before me without an offering. Second, celebrate the festival of harvest when you bring me the first crops of your harvest. Finally, celebrate the festival of the final harvest at the end of the harvest season when you have harvested all the crops from your fields. And these three times each year, every man in Israel must appear before the sovereign, the Lord. You must not offer the blood of my sacrificial offerings together with any baked goods containing yeast. And do not leave the fat from the festival offerings until the next morning. As you harvest your crops, bring the very best of the first harvest to the house of the Lord your God. You must not cook a young goat in its mother's milk. See, I'm sending an angel before you to protect you on your journey and lead you safely to the place I prepared for you. Pay close attention to him and obey his instructions. Do not rebel against him, for he is my representative and he'll not forgive your rebellion. But if you're careful to obey him, following all my instructions, then I'll be an enemy to your enemies and I'll oppose those who oppose you. For my angel will go before you and bring you in the land of the Amorites, Hittites, Perizzites, Canaanites, Hivites, Jebusites, Micanike. Kidding. So you may live there. And I'll destroy them completely. Verse 24. You must not worship the gods of these nations or serve them in any way or imitate their evil practices. Instead, you must utterly destroy them and smash their sacred pillars. You must serve only the Lord your God. If you do, I will bless you with food and water and I'll protect you from illnesses. There will be no miscarriages or infertility in your land and I'll give you long, full lives. Interesting. I will send my terror ahead of you and create panic among the people of the lands you invade. I will make all your enemies turn and run. I will send terror ahead to drive out the Hivites, Canaanites, and Hittites. But I'll not drive them out in a single year because the land would become desolate and the wild animals would multiply and threaten you. I will drive them out little at a time until your population has increased enough to take possession of the land. And I'll fix your boundaries from the Red Sea to the Mediterranean Sea and from the eastern wilderness to the Euphrates River. I will hand over to you the people now living in the land, and you'll drive them out ahead of you. Make no treaties with them or their gods. They must not live in your land, or they'll cause you to sin against me. If you serve their gods, you'll be caught in the trap of idolatry. Chapter 24. Israel accepts the Lord's covenant. Then the Lord God instructed Moses, "Come up here to me and bring along Aaron, Nadab, Abihu, and 70 of the Israel's elders. All of you must worship from a distance. Only Moses is allowed to come near the Lord. The others must not come near, and none of the other people are allowed to climb up the mountain with him." Then Moses went down to the people and repeated all the instructions and regulations the Lord had given him. And all the people answered with one voice, "We'll do everything the Lord has commanded." Then Moses carefully wrote down all the Lord's instructions. Early the next morning, Moses got up and built an altar at the foot of the mountain. He also set up 12 pillars, one for each of the 12 tribes of Israel. Then he sent home some of the young Israelite men to present burnt offerings and to sacrifice bulls as peace offerings to the Lord. Moses drained half of the blood from these animals into basins, and the other half he splattered against the altar. Then he took the Book of the Covenant and read it aloud to the people. Again, they all responded, "We'll do everything the Lord has commanded. We will obey." Then Moses took the blood from the basins and splattered it over the people, declaring, "Look, his blood confirms the covenant the Lord has made with you in giving you these instructions." Then Moses, Aaron, Nadab, Abihu, and the 70 elders of Israel climbed up the mountain. There they saw the God of Israel. Under his feet, there seemed to be a surface of brilliant blue lapis lazuli, as clear as the sky itself. And though these nobles of Israel gazed upon God, he did not destroy them. In fact, they ate a covenant meal, eating and drinking in his presence. Whoa, that's amazing. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Come up to me on the mountain. Stay there, and I'll give you the tablets of stone on which I've inscribed the instructions and command you so you can teach the people." So Moses and his assistant Joshua set out, and Moses climbed the mountain of God. Moses told the elders, "Stay here and wait for us until we come back. Aaron and Hur are here with you. If anyone has a dispute while I'm gone, consult with them." Then Moses climbed up the mountain, and the cloud covered it. And the glory of the Lord settled down on Mount Sinai, and the cloud covered it for 6 days. On the seventh day, the Lord called to Moses from inside the cloud. To the Israelites at the foot of the mountain, to the foot of the mountain, the glory of the Lord appeared on the summit like a consuming fire. Then Moses disappeared into the cloud as he climbed higher and higher up the mountain. He remained on the mountain for 40 days and 40 nights. Chapter 25. The Lord said to Moses, "Tell the people of Israel to bring me their sacred offerings. Accept the constitutions from all whose hearts are moved to offer them. Here is a list of sacred offerings you may accept from them: gold, silver, and bronze, purple and scarlet thread, fine linen and goat hair for cloth, tan ram skins and fine goatskin leather, acacia wood, olive oil for the lamps, spices for the anointing oil and the fragrance incense, onyx stones and other gemstones to be set in ephod and the priest's chest piece. Have the people of Israel build me a holy sanctuary so I can live among them. You must build this tabernacle and its furnishings exactly according to the pattern I will show you. Have the people make an ark of acacia wood, a sacred chest 45 inches long, 27 inches wide, and 27 inches high. Overlay it inside and outside with pure gold and run a molding of gold all around it. Pass four gold rings and attach them to its 4 feet, 2 rings on each side. Make poles from the acacia wood and overlay them with gold. Insert the poles into the rings on the sides of the ark to carry it. These carrying poles must stay inside the rings, never remove them. When the ark is finished, place it inside the stone tablets inscribed with the terms of the covenant, which I'll give to you. Then make the ark's cover, the place of atonement, from pure gold. It must be 45 inches long and 27 inches wide. Then make two cherubim from hammered gold and place them on the two ends of the atonement cover. Mold the cherubim on each end of the atonement cover, making it all one piece of gold. The cherubim will face each other and look down on the atonement cover. With their wings spread above it, they'll protect it. Place inside the ark the stone tablets inscribed with the terms of the covenant, which I will give you. Then put the stone cover on top of the ark. I will meet you there and talk to you from above the atonement cover between the gold cherubim that hover over the ark of the covenant. From there, I will give you my commands for the people of Israel. Then make a table of acacia wood, 36 inches long, 18 inches wide, and 27 inches high. Overlay it with pure gold and run a gold molding around the edge. Decorate it with a 3-inch border all around and run a gold molding along the border. Make gold earrings for the table and attach them to the four corners next to the four legs. Attach the rings near the border to hold the poles that are used to carry the table. Make these poles from acacia wood and overlay them with gold. Make special containers of pure gold for the table, bowls, ladles, pitchers, and jars to be used in pouring out of liquid offerings. Place the bread of the presence on the table to remain before me at all times. Make a lampstand of pure hammered gold and make the entire lampstand and its decorations one piece: the base, center stem, lamp cups, buds, and petals. Make it with 6 branches going out from the center stem, 3 on each side. Each of the 6 branches will have lamp's cup shaped like almond blossoms, complete with buds and petals. Craft the center stem of the lampstand with 4 lamp cups shaped like almond blossoms, complete with buds and petals. There will also be an almond bud beneath each pair of branches where the 6 branches extend from the center stem. The almond buds and branches must all be one piece with the center stem, and they must be hammered from pure gold. Then make the 7 lamps from the lampstand and set them to reflect light forward. The lamp snuffers and trays must also be made of pure gold. You'll need 75 pounds of pure gold for the lampstand and its accessories. Be sure that you make everything according to the pattern I've shown you here on the mountain. Chapter 26. Make the tabernacle from 10 curtains of finely woven linen. Decorate the curtains with blue, purple, and scarlet thread and skillfully embroidered cherubim. These 10 curtains must all be exactly the same, 42 feet long and 6 feet wide. Join 5 of these curtains together to make one long curtain, then join the 5 into a second long curtain. Put loops of blue yarn along the edge of the last curtain in each set. The 50 loops along the edge of one curtain are to match the 50 loops along the edge of the other curtain. Then make 50 gold clasps and fasten them along curtains together with the clasps. In this way, the tabernacle will be made of one continuous piece. Make 11 curtains of goat hair cloth to serve as a tent covering for the tabernacle. These 11 curtains must be exactly the same size, 45 feet long and 6 feet wide. Join 5 of these curtains together to make one long curtain, and join the other 6 into a second long curtain. Allow 3 feet of material from the second set of curtains to hang over the front of the sacred tent. God is very specific, people. Make 50 loops for one edge and each large curtain. Then make 50 bronze clasps and fasten the loops of the long curtains with clasps. In this way, the tent covering will be made of one continuous piece. The remaining 3 feet of this tent covering will be left to hang over the back of the tabernacle. Allow 18 inches of remaining material to cover down over the side until it's completely covered. Complete the tent covering with a protective layer of tan ramskins and a layer of goatskin leather. For the framework of the tabernacle, construct frames of acacia wood. Each must be 15 foot high and 27 inches wide. With two pegs under each frame, make all the frames identical. Make 20 of these frames to support the curtains on the south side of the tabernacle, and also make 40 silver bases. Stay with us, guys. Stay with us. Don't drop out now. Two bases under each frame, with the pegs fitting securely into the bases. For the north side of the tabernacle, make another 20 frames with 40 silver bases, two bases under each frame. Make six frames for the rear, the west side of the tabernacle, along with two additional frames to reinforce the rear corners of the tabernacle. These corner frames will be matched at the bottom and firmly attached at the top with a single ring, forming a single corner unit. Make sure both of these corner units are the same. So there'll be eight frames to the rear of the tabernacle, set in 16 silver bases and two bases in each frame, under each frame. Make crossbars of acacia wood to link the frames. Five crossbars for the north side and four for the south side. Also make five crossbars for the rear of the tabernacle, which will face west. The middle crossbar attached halfway up the frames will run all the way from the end of the tabernacle to the other. Overlay the frames with gold and make gold rings to hold the crossbars. Overlay the crossbars with gold as well. Set up this tabernacle according to the pattern you are shown on the mountain. For the inside of the tabernacle, make a special curtain of finely woven linen. Decorate it with blue, purple, and scarlet thread and skillfully embroidered cherubim. Hang this curtain on the gold hooks attached to the four posts of acacia wood. Overlay the posts with gold and set them there in four silver bases. Hang the inner curtain from clasps and put the Ark of the Covenant in the room behind it. This curtain will separate the holy place from the most holy place. Then put the Ark's cover, the place of atonement, on top of the Ark of the Covenant inside the most holy place. Place the table outside the inner curtain on the north side of the tabernacle and place the lampstand across the room on the south side. Make another curtain for the entrance to the sacred tent. Make it a finely woven linen and embroider it with exquisite designs using blue, purple, and scarlet thread. Craft five posts from the acacia wood and overlay them with gold and hang the curtain with the gold hooks. Cast five bronze bases from the posts. Chapter 27. Using acacia wood. Oh, this is a mouthful. Using acacia wood, construct a square altar 7.5 feet wide, 7.5 feet long, and 4.5 feet wide high. Make horns for each of its four corners so that the horns of the altar are one piece, and overlay the altar with bronze. Make ash buckets, shovels, basins, meat forks, and fire pans all of bronze. Make a bronze grating for it and attach four bronze rings at its four corners. Install the grating halfway down on the side of the altar under the ledge. For carrying the altar, make poles from acacia wood and overlay them with bronze. Insert the poles through the rings on the two sides of the altar. The altar must be hollow, made from planks, and build it as just as you are shown on the mountain. Then make the courtyard for the tabernacle, enclosed with curtains made of finely woven linen. On the south side, make the curtains 150 feet long. They'll be held up by 20 posts that were set securely in bronze bases, and hang the curtains in silver hooks and rings. Make the curtains the same on the north side, 150 foot of curtains, holding up 20 posts securely in bronze bases. Hang the curtains with silver hooks and rings. Alyssa, I should have had you do today. The curtains on the west and the end of the courtyard will be 75 feet long, supported by 10 posts set into 10 bases. The east end of the courtyard, the front, will also be 75 feet long. The courtyard entrance will be on the east end, flanked by two curtains. The curtain on the right side will be 22.5, supported by three posts and three bases. The curtain on the left side will also be 22.5 feet long, supported by three posts set into three bases. For the entrance of the courtyard, make a curtain that is 30 feet long. Make it from finely woven linen and decorate it with beautiful embroidery in blue, purple, and scarlet thread. Support it with four posts, each securely set in its own base. All the posts around the courtyard must have silver rings and hooks and bronze bases. So the entire courtyard will be 150 feet long and 75 feet wide, the curtain walls 7.5 feet high, made from finely woven linen. The base for posts will be made of bronze. All the article used in the rituals of the tabernacle, including all the tent pegs used to support the tabernacle and all the courtyard curtains, must be made of bronze. Command the people of Israel to bring you pure oil of pressed olives for the light, to keep the lamps burning continually. The lampstand will stand in the tabernacle in front of the inner curtain that shields the Ark of the Covenant. Aaron and his sons must keep the light burning in the Lord's presence all night. This is a permanent law for the people of Israel, and it must be observed from generation to generation. One more chapter. We're there. We're at the 10-yard line. Chapter 28. Call for your brother, Aaron, and his sons, Nadab, Abihu, Eleazar, and Ishtamar. Set them apart from the rest of the people of Israel, so they may minister to me and my priests. Imagine if I read it like that the whole time. Make sacred garments for Aaron and that are glorious and beautiful. Instruct all the skilled craftsmen whom I've filled with spirit of wisdom and have them make garments for Aaron that will distinguish him as a priest set apart for my service. These are the garments they are to make: a chest piece, an ephod, a robe, a patterned tunic, a turban, and a sash. They are to make these sacred garments for your brother Aaron and his sons to wear as they when they serve me as priests. So give them fine linen cloth, gold thread, blue, purple, and scarlet thread. This sounds like insignificant, but this is all very significant because this is God laying the groundwork for hundreds of years of the priesthood, the tabernacle, and all of that. So, like, this is the ground floor. So it's mundane, all the measurements, but it is, to me, very interesting how detailed God is and how he's specific on how he wants his kingdom built. All right. It will consist of two pieces, front and back, joined at the shoulders with two shoulder pieces. Verse 8. The decorative sash will be made of the same materials, finely woven linen embroidered with gold, with blue, with purple and scarlet thread. Take two onyx stones and engrave on them the names of the tribes of Israel. Six names will be on each stone, arranged in the order of birth of the original sons of Israel. Engrave these names on the two stones in the same way a jeweler will engrave a seal. Then mount the stones in settings of gold filigree. Fasten the two stones on the shoulder pieces of the ephod as a reminder that Aaron represents the people of Israel. Aaron will carry these names on his shoulder as a constant reminder whenever he goes before the Lord. Make the settings of gold filigree. Then braid two cords of pure gold and attach them to the filigree setting on the shoulders of the ephod. Then with great skill and care, make a chest piece to be worn for seeking a decision from God. Make it to match the ephod using fine woven linen embroidered with gold and blue and purple and scarlet thread. Make the chest piece of a single piece of clothing folded to form a pouch of 9 inches square. Mount four rows of gemstones on it. The first row will contain a red carnelian, a pale green peridot, and an emerald. The second row will have a turquoise, a blue lapis lazuli, and a white moonstone. The third will contain an orange jacinth, an agate, and a purple amethyst. The fourth row will contain a blue green beryl, an onyx, and a green jasper. All these stones will be set in gold filigree. Each stone will represent one of the 12 sons of Israel, and the name of the tribe will be engraved on it like a seal. To attach the chest piece to the ephod, make braided cords of pure gold thread. Then make two gold rings and attach them to the top corners of the chest piece. Tie the two gold cords to the two rings on the chest piece. Then make two more gold rings and attach them to the inside of the chest piece next to the ephod. And make two more gold rings and attach them to the front of the shoulder pieces, just above the knot where the decorative sash is fastened to the ephod. Then attach the bottom rings of the chest piece to the rings of the ephod with the blue cords. This will hold the chest piece secure to the ephod above the decorative sash. In this way, Aaron will carry the names of the tribes of Israel on the sacred chest piece over his heart when he goes into the holy place. This will be a continual reminder that he represents the people where he comes before the Lord. Insert the Urim and the Thummim into the sacred chest piece so they'll be carried over Aaron's heart when he goes in the Lord's presence. In this way, Aaron will always carry over his heart the objects used to determine the Lord's will for his people whenever he goes in before the Lord. Make the robe that is worn with the ephod from a single piece of blue cloth. With an opening of Aaron's head in the middle of it, reinforce the opening with a woven collar so it will not tear. Make pomegranates out of blue, purple, and scarlet yarn and attach them to the hem of the robe with gold bells between them. The gold bells and pomegranates are to alternate all around the hem. Aaron will wear his robe whenever he ministers before the Lord, and the bells will tinkle as he goes in. The bells will tinkle. Okay, sorry, that threw me off. As he goes in and out of the Lord's presence in the holy place. If he wears it, he will not die. Next, make a medallion of pure gold and engrave it like a seal with these words, "Holy to the Lord." Attach the medallion with the blue cord to the front of Aaron's turban, where it must remain. Aaron must wear it on his head so he may take on himself any guilt of the people of Israel when they consecrate their sacred offerings. He must always wear it on his forehead so the Lord will accept the people. Weave Aaron's patterned tunic from fine linen cloth and fashion his turban from fine linen as well. Also make a sash and decorate it with colorful embroidery. For Aaron's sons, make tunics, sashes, and special head coverings that are glorious and beautiful. Clothe your brother, Aaron, and his sons with these garments, and then anoint and ordain them. Consecrate them so they can serve as priests. Also make linen undergarments for them. to be worn next to their bodies, reaching their hips to their thighs. These must be worn whenever Aaron and his sons enter the tabernacle or approach the altar in the holy place to perform their priestly duties. Then they will not incur guilt and die. This is a permanent law for Aaron and all his descendants after him. All right, guys, we did it. That is chapter 28. I want you to make sure that you open your app. Whew. That was a mouthful, guys. That was a mouthful. All right. We made it, yeah, to 28. So go ahead and open your app and make sure that you check all the boxes there. So let me check off mine. Feels good. We're doing it, guys. We're doing it. We're doing it. There we go. You are done with day six. Day six is underway. What a journey this has been. We got a long time to go. Tomorrow will be Exodus 29 to 40. Thank you guys for being here. Thank you for engaging the chat. I cannot read the chat while I'm reading. I'll glance at it here and there, but it's just way too distracting. It throws me off. I can't find my place. So it's just better to just read through and then I can engage and all that stuff. But I really appreciate you guys. Thank you all of you that came in from the prayer call. We have prayer calls Thursday at 1 p.m. to our month for our monthly partners. So if you're a monthly partner on the website or YouTube, we are crowd supported. So all of our content is free. All these videos are free. All of our Monday and Tuesday teachings are free. And then we're supported by the viewers. So thank you for partnering. Pray About Sowing and Giving. The link's there on screen and in the comments. Also, make sure you check out my book because we don't have a video sponsor. So the video is sponsored by my book, How to Cast Out Demons. This is a comprehensive guide to simplifying deliverance. You can get it on Amazon. How to Cast Out Demons by Isaiah Saldivar. Those of you listening on audio and Spotify, thank you for posting and sharing. Tag me on Instagram. Share a story on Instagram of this and I will share it. Thank you guys. I appreciate you guys. I'm going to get off here because we just had an hour prayer call and then an hour long live stream. But I love you guys so much. I appreciate you guys. We'll be live again tomorrow. Every single day we're live. And then we will be Monday night teaching and Tuesday podcast. Okay? Love you guys very much. We'll have more guest people appearing. And yeah, awesome. So excited. Thank you for sharing it. Tell your friends and family about this. Get them on here. Love you guys. Salute.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of the Revival Lifestyle Podcast. If you like what you heard, go to www.isaiahsaldivar.com for more content. And please follow me on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram at Isaiah Saldivar. See you next week.